Now, in the week that we mark Remembrance Day, the final reading featuring extracts from the diaries of Edith Appleton. Edie worked as a nurse during the Great War. After a gap in the diaries of 11 months, we rejoin her in 1918 at a grand hotel turned military hospital on the cliffs above Le Tréport. Anticipation is growing that the end of the war could be in sight, and Edie fears for the safety of her youngest brother, Taff. Rachel Atkins is the reader.
June 21st. I returned to Abbeville from leave, June 15th, and found orders awaiting me to proceed forthwith to No. 3 General Hospital. They seemed a sad little group at Six Sisters in the home, and I was sorry to leave them. The hospital is splendid, partly in a huge hotel perched on the top of a high cliff. It felt a little strange at first, being back to large numbers, big wounds, the smells of gas gangrene, pus and antiseptics. But my nose is getting used to them now. June 28th. We had a convoy in yesterday. I only took 8 of them. Some nasty wounds. 2 with appendicitis, 1 a New Zealander who's been in the war since 1914. He thinks Brother Taff must be at Douyon, as all the New Zealanders are there. I hope he is, as at the moment that part of the line is quiet, if you can call any part of it quiet. July 5th. This is my day off. Thought I would sleep late, but nature can't do with such irregular habits, and it was business as usual at 5 a.m. A great blow. Someone is sharing my room, and it makes early rising rather an agony, as I'm afraid of waking her. A staff nurse, quite nice, objected to sharing rooms with the one she was supposed to, a Bart's contemporary of mine and an absolute prize grouser. So if I get tired of this child, I know what to do. Start bemoaning my fate, and perhaps she will again ask to be moved. July 14th. On Friday, I took patients for England to Abbeville to join the ambulance train there. Spent 5 hours visiting my old hospital and friends, and started back for Tréport at 2:30. I had a strong feeling all along that I'd been sent in disgrace from Abbeville. It was so sudden and unexpected. I heard on Friday that it was the matron of the home who had me ejected. She told Miss McCarthy that I influenced the staff, so that she could do nothing with them. The truth is that she tried to boss me and run the hospital when I was in charge. I would not have that, and told her so. After all, when I am in charge, it is quite sufficient for me to boss the staff. She hated me for not allowing her to, and so got me thrown out. The dirty dog. July 23rd. Up to the present, the news keeps good. The British are in it now, near Reims, and are doing as well as the French and Americans. We're using a deadly gas that eats through the German helmets. I really wish both sides would give up gas. It is a devilish way of fighting. It isn't fighting. One poor creature in the ward is very ill indeed. DI and has gas gangrene. He wrote home yesterday. Dear Mother, you will be pleased to know I am wounded in the left leg and am in hospital. I have never yet known a man write a letter home that could worry his people. They are a wonderful lot. July 27th. Yesterday, Sister McCorkadale and I took our tea and went up for a most glorious walk to Eux by tram, then straight out and up, 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 all the way. First through cultivated land, then woodland. When we'd walked what seemed to us about 4 miles, we came upon an old man tidying up a chateau garden. We asked if we were nearly at La Madeleine, our destination. He laughed and said he hoped we were not in a hurry, as we had encore 5 kilometres, more than 3 miles more. We had plenty of time, so didn't mind a bit. La Madeleine is a huge forest owned by the state. Pines, larches, oaks, mountain ashes, birches, every sort of tree. The pines and larches keep very much to themselves. It was like walking on velvet going through them, the ground thick in last year's needles. The mountain ashes were just red, and it was very pretty to look far into the depths of the forest. All the tree trunks were covered in brilliant green moss, and the bright red berries of the mountain ashes peeped through, and above, violet blue sky and dead white clouds. There is only one house. The forester lives there, the head forester, I suppose, judging by a photograph on the wall. We had tea there, fruit and cream rusks and butter and tea. They put a bowl quite full of cream on the table, and a hurt if you don't finish it. We did. While we were waiting for our tram in Trepore, a lorry arrived from somewhere near Amiens, bringing 20 officers down on a few hours' leave. Just about there, I was looking in a cafe. Some tables were occupied by soldiers. At one were two girls, dressed and painted to a high degree, playing cards and laughing loudly. They did not seem much interested in their game, but the lorry load of clean young officers seemed to need all their attention. August 5th. We still feel like holding our breath about the news. Still excellent. Long may it last. Soissons has fallen to us, and we are near Reims. All the Allies seem to have fought splendidly, including the Americans, who of course ought to. They're using the cream of their men, and they are fresh. We are getting a convoy of wounded down every day now. Etaples is not being used. I suppose it is still out of action from its last bombing raid. Wish I could hear of or from Taff. I'm wondering very much where he comes in all this. August 19th. Our last convoy was a heavy one, of gas men. I only took 11, but 11 such as they added to my already very busy ward means a lot. The two poor spines are dying so slowly. One, an old sergeant, is quite happily rambling on to his wife, a queer old fish, who looks reproachfully and almost reprovingly at him for dying. I sat out on the pierhead yesterday afternoon. It was gloriously breezy, and I was entertained by watching a Belgian officer making love to a Belgian lady who seemed far more taken up with keeping her skirts from being blown over her head than with him. As it was, her little powder puff blew away, and two little boys had a fine game chasing it until it finally dodged through a porthole and flew out to sea. August 27th. The battles are raging hot and strong, and up to yesterday there seemed to be no holding back the Allies. God speed them still. Our boy Taff is in the thick of it at Bapaume. At least, so I imagine. A New Zealander I have in told me the whole division was there. It is a difficult part of the line, and I'm wishing the whole bloody war at an end, and all the boys safely home. September 4th. We are absolutely flooded out with Germans, and I imagine hundreds are being killed. A Canadian I had in yesterday was surprised when I told him how many we had. He said they had orders to kill as many as they could, and said they killed them just as fast as they could. God help us. September 11th. The busy time continues, although the last two train loads have had quite a percentage of what we call ICT, that is, such things as poison sore or tears of barbed wire. But an empty bed is still an unknown thing. I don't know how the soldiers keep it up, but I think hospital staffs are beginning to feel a bit done. But we still would much rather them get on with the war, if it means ending it sooner. We have got the funniest old Scot in the ward, shot through the stomach, has to be dressed often. He knows each time exactly how he wants to be laid and tells us, "On my right side, with my bottom there." Or sometimes he does not say which side. "Put my bottom there and I'll be right." So we do exactly as he says, and he is quite content. No news of Taff. I suppose he is still in the thick of it. October 11th. Sad. I have taken my beautiful winter coat to be made hideous and regulation. Silly fools. I went for a walk along the seafront at Merse yesterday. I thought the seafront quite a respectable place to walk alone in the evening, but evidently it is not. Every Frenchman who was by himself cooed me. At least, I don't know what you call it, a sort of tweet-tweet noise. So there you are. I can't walk alone at night now the clocks are put back. I suppose they thought I was on the lookout for a companion. Not much. They evidently don't realise the bliss and joy of being quite alone when you live in a hum of many voices always. October 14th. Great excitement yesterday over the newspaper heading, Kaiser's Cabinet Gives In. And we're all wondering just what it means. The Hun is no more sorry for what he has done now than he was 4 years ago. Of that, all are certain. And as to saying he agrees to vacate Belgium, the fool agrees. There's not much agrees about it. He is being made to do it, every minute of his life and at top speed. Dirty dogs, every one of them. October 19th. I was off last evening and had to go to town for my coat. It was nearly dark when I got there, and there were huge flags flying. I wondered what on earth for, but I soon found. The people were rejoicing over the retaking of Lille, Ostend and Bruges, Lille especially. Little urchins were marching through the town with improvised bands, drums, voices and whistles, but it sounded joyful. Many of the inhabitants here are refugees from somewhere the Boches invaded. November 9th. There is a whole lot of peace talk going on, but they don't seem to be getting on with it. The news has been absolutely glorious, and yesterday we have had lots of convoys down, chiefly not very severe cases, and my head has been too much like a pumpkin with neuralgia to tell a single word of anything that may have happened. They have swarmed in and swarmed out, and some have had influenza, and all are very cheerful about the news. Rather helpful for us, the German Navy has mutinied. Badly. November 12th. Peace. Thank God for that. It feels very queer, too. Kind as if your elastic had snapped. Matron and I took some sick sisters to Abbeville yesterday. The moment we stopped at the siding, we were pounced upon by the ambulance drivers and told we were much behind the times for not knowing the news. They had been told the night before. Evidently, the folk everywhere had heard the news. French girls were embracing Tommies, and French children blew kisses to us as we passed. French soldiers waved ecstatically and looked as if for two pins, or if we were not going so fast, they would climb aboard and kiss us. We came back to Tréport only a few minutes after the news reached it, and in less than an hour the whole place had gone stark mad. Flags of all nations flying from everywhere, sirens blowing in long shrieks, short shrieks, every way. All the bands turned out and processed along the camp with convalescent patients and oddments of French following. Ambulances bedecked with flags and streamers, and about 16 inside, and as many as could manage to stay there on the roof, paraded solemnly round and round the roads, the men cheering and shouting. In the afternoon, I think many had drunk the good health of the occasion, and the entente spirit was well to the fore. In the music room, we bought 6 bottles of good port, and when the lights were up, we made the longest inpatient, a sergeant of the naval division, make a little speech, and all drank to peace. Here endeth the fighting part of the war. God save the king.
Edie went on to run a carriage of the 42 ambulance train, then worked in a nurse's hostel in Boulogne before being demobilised in 1919. Her brother Taff survived the war. Episode 3 of The Diaries of Edith Appleton was read by Rachel Atkins. It was abridged by Stephen Williams and produced by Joanna Green. And it was a peer production for BBC Radio 4.